The Philippine peso opens to a new record low against the U.S. dollar. Metro Manila back at moderate risk for COVID-19 weeks following the return to face-to-face classes. Hundreds of Filipino workers stranded for 3 years at a remote U.S. military base over a wage dispute. And senators question the basis and bidding process for the controversial laptops deal. Hi, I'm Carmina Constantino. Dateline Philippines begins right now. Thanks for joining us. For those of you watching us on YouTube and on Facebook, glad you could join us today. Topping the news at this hour, the Philippine peso continues to depreciate against the U.S. dollar. It opened this morning at a new record low of 57.35 against the greenback. So far, it has reached an intraday low of 57.39. The peso firmed up slightly in the past days, but it was quickly overwhelmed by a renewed surge in the U.S. dollar as investors flocked to safe havens following expectations of another supersized rate hike from the Federal Reserve next week. Philippine President Ferdinand Marcos Jr. expected to meet with the U.S. Chamber of Commerce and several business groups during his trip to the U.S. next week. The Foreign Affairs Department says the meetings aim to foster necessary partnerships that will benefit the Philippine economy. Marcos will also hold an economic briefing as he tries to draw more foreign investors into the Philippines.
At these engagements, he will be able to have wide-ranging and candid discussions with political, business, and community leaders on raising the profile of the Philippines in the United States, contributing to the President's economic agenda, and strengthening Philippine-U.S. political, economic, and cultural ties. This briefing will be an opportunity to outline the key economic priorities of his administration, with a special focus on how we can hopefully expand and strengthen Philippine-U.S. trade and investment relations during his term.
Marcos will be in the U.S. from September 18 to 24 to attend and speak at the U.N. General Assembly in New York. The trip follows his inaugural state visits to Indonesia and Singapore, where the Philippines was able to secure 804 billion pesos worth of investment pledges. In other news, Metro Manila back at moderate risk classification for COVID. The health department says the region's positivity rate has gone up to 16.4%. DOH officer in charge, Maria Rosario Vergara, says the agency is determining whether the increase in cases can be attributed to the resumption of face-to-face classes.
Ito pong ating national capital region, if we try to look at this, disaggregating it, meron po tayong 11 out of the 17 cities and lone municipality in NCR na nasa moderate risk case classification. And meron po tayo na 6 out of the 17 na meron hong pagtaas ng mga ward accommodation or admission sa kanilang mga ospital. Although ang ICU natin sa NCR, we only have Pasig and Muntinlupa na medyo mataas ang kanilang ICU admissions. Hindi natin pwedeng i-attribute na itong pagtaas ng mga kasong ito dito sa pagtatanggal ng mask outdoors, because as I've said, it would take us around 1 to 2 weeks for us to be able to analyze the effect of this easing of masking or optional masking outdoors. What we can say, tumaas ang mobility mula nung nag-umpisa yung face-to-face classes. So tinitignan natin yung link at relasyon nito dito sa pagtaas, kasi hindi naman natin nakikita yung ganitong pagtaas sa ibang rehiyon.
Overall, the country's COVID positivity rate has risen to 12.5% as of September 13 from 12% last week. The health department now warning against complacency. This after the World Health Organization said the end of the pandemic is in sight.
This has caught parang quite a stir sa ating mga social media platforms. Marami nagtanong. Marami kasi hindi binasa yung buong artikulo. Ang ginawa ng marami, binasa yung title, tapos akala nila siguro sinasabi na ng WHO, patapos na tayo sa pandemya. Ang sinasabi po ni Dr. Tedros doon sa article na yan ay the end of this pandemic is in sight. Ibig sabihin, nakikita niya na baka dadating na tayo dun sa punto that we can be able to declare, no? Magde-declare ng WHO ng katapusan. Pero ang pinaka-importante sa mga sinabi niya, kaya niya nakikita yan, dahil sabi niya, nakikita na niya na nagde-decline na ang number of deaths, nagde-decline ang number of severe and critical across the different countries in the world.
Progressive lawmakers not satisfied with the explanation of Vice President and concurrent Education Chief Sara Duterte on why the Education Department needs 150 million pesos in confidential funds. Duterte earlier told Congress this budget will be used to address the supposed sexual grooming of students and the alleged recruitment of terrorist organizations in schools. But Kabataan Party List Representative Raul Manuel isn't convinced.
Nandiyan na yung mga programa dapat, no? Paano i-address yung ganung mga bagay. For example, yung tungkol sa grooming ng ating mga students, ating mga kabataan. We have the Child Protection Program na pending din yung kanyang budget cut. Hindi na bago yung ganung mga issues at dapat nga meron ng clear-cut guidelines. Paano talaga ma-hold accountable yung mga perpetrators noon? Doon naman sa matters of national security, hindi yun part ng mandate ng Department of Education. Actually, dapat kayo yung focus niya ay paano natin matutulungan yung ating mga kabataan to recover from learning loss.
Manuel also says lawmakers missed the opportunity to question Duterte directly about the office of the Vice President's proposed budget for 2023. That's after the leadership of the House Committee on Appropriations swiftly terminated Wednesday's deliberations out of courtesy.
Sa committee deliberations, ang haharap talaga doon ay yung mga opisyal ng ahensya. Ibig sabihin, kung sino yung secretary, yung head ng department, pati nga yung mga undersecretary, required pa nga eh, na pati mga regional directors ay umupo para tiyak na kung ano man yung tanong naming mga kongresista ay merong sasagot. Pero pagdating na sa plenary deliberations, ang mas magsasalita na in behalf of the agency ay yung mga kongresista who committed to sponsor the proposed budget of these agencies.
There was no legal basis to the Philippine Education Department's 2.4 billion peso purchase of allegedly overpriced but outdated laptops. That's what senators discovered Thursday following another Blue Ribbon Committee hearing on the controversy. And an education official claimed the memorandum of agreement for the procurement, which was done through the budget department's purchasing arm, was signed and notarized in late May to early June of last year. But the bidding seemed to have taken place earlier despite the lack of an agreement.
May 3, I had submitted a draft MOA to Undersecretary Annalyn M. Sevilla and Assistant Secretary Salvador C. Malana, requesting for their comments, inputs, updates with regard to that draft MOA that I had drafted. The MOA that was signed by the executives, Yusek Lloyd Lau, Assistant Secretary Malana, Attorney Jason Meruayan, and Secretary Briones, they were all signed May 2021.
April, nagne-negotiation pa kayo sa MOA, May 6, ganon. So, ibig mong sabihin, at the time, wala pang final MOA. In spite of the fact na ang aming diniscuss dito for more than 2 hearings na akala namin February 16, 2021, may MOA na. Signed. So, is that what you're saying? No. By April, May, wala pa.
Now and last time, Mr. Mora and now Mr. Attorney Bragado, na wala pa hong MOA by May. In effect, Mr. Chair, this whole procurement is defective. Wala hong legal basis. No, bumili ho tayo, gumastos ho tayo ng 2.4 billion pesos na walang MOA.
The project was meant to provide laptops to some 68,500 teachers with a budget of 35,000 pesos per unit. However, only 39,000 teachers received the equipment, because the cost per unit shot up to 58,300 pesos. Senate Minority Leader Coco Pimentel also questioning why details of the procurement order for the laptops were not followed. It was revealed that key technical specifications of the laptops may have been changed from what was being asked in the order. Pimentel says this means the laptops are no longer covered by the warranty and may no longer be replaced.
Malaki ang pagkakabaling nangyari nga kasi dapat sinusunod yung specifications na nakasulat. Otherwise, nagde-debate pala kayo. Baliwala lahat ng rules natin sa bidding kasi sabi natin sa rules natin, isulat yung specs. Eh. Baliwala pala yung specs, pwede pala palitan. The spirit of the law is transparency.
The Senate Blue Ribbon Committee is set to hold its final hearing on the matter next week. Well, earlier this week, though, the Senate minority released its own findings into another controversy, the sugar importation fiasco. The minority rejected the Blue Ribbon Committee report that cleared Executive Secretary Vic Rodriguez in the scandal. For his reaction, we're now joined by the chairman of the Blue Ribbon Committee, Senator Francis Tolentino. Senator, good afternoon to you, and thank you for joining us today. Welcome to the program.
Good afternoon to the viewers as well.
All right, so the two-member minority coming out with their own report, we want to get your reaction to that. First off, that the BRC, which you had, was silent on the accountability of Executive Secretary Vic Rodriguez. The minority senator saying the Executive Secretary is not entirely without fault. Your reaction to their findings?
Let's clarify this. The minority report is in fact not a report, but the views of certain senators coming from the minority. So it's considered as a supplemental or additional views to form part of the majority report. So the majority report prevails because that is signed by, I think, more than 14 members of the Blue Ribbon Committee. So let's be clear about that. There are no two reports. There is just one report, the majority report.
But then the findings of the two members
findings
of the minority,
yes.
Are you totally ignoring that?
That
view?
That will form part of the majority report as a supplementary report because the minority in all parliaments around the world, the minority were allowed to express their views, to questions, etc. But again, the majority prevails in any parliamentary system or congressional system in the world.
So let's get into their views.
The views of the minority will be respected, but the views of the majority prevails in any system, in any even in a board of director meeting. So if we dissect the views, they now claim that the persons indicted should be forgiven because there would be no basis, etc. But then again, the evidence presented and called from the several hearings would point to the majority's opinion as based on evidence, based in fact adduced, based in law.
Okay, so let's get into that right now, yes. Senator Tolentino. What was your reason?
That will entail details. That will entail legal and factual justification. I don't know if you can do this here, but I am not defending any person that should not be included. I will be defending the majority report because that is reflective of the views of the majority.
Right. So the majority report has it that there was ample reason to clear the executive secretary. What is
because,
the prevailing reason for
that?
That was not
part of the report.
So
the majority found that there was no evidence pointing to support a quantum of proof that if you mention the executive, I'm not defending the executive secretary.
Sure.
If there is evidence to point as to the culpability of the executive secretary, that we will sign that. But there was no evidence. If they can show an inkling of evidence that would point to the liability of the executive secretary, we will sign a report. But there was no evidence that can be pointed out. I'm not defending the executive secretary. I don't know him. I am defending the majority report.
Very clear. Senator Tolentino, also in the last hearing, the executive secretary was supposed to have confirmed or at least provided you with material.
What hearing is this?
The last one. The last one before you terminated. The hearing when the executive secretary showed up.
To the sugar.
Yes.
Not to the laptop, yes.
Right. We're going to go into that later on. But first, let's focus on the views of the minority here. So in that last hearing...
We respect the views of the minority.
Yeah. In the last hearing, Senator Tolentino, there was a question about whether or not there was actually some people in an online meeting while there was a physical meeting between Mr. Serafica and E.S. Rodriguez, and he was supposed to get back to you on that. Has he gone back to you? Has he provided you with any more details regarding that?
I think I was the one who raised that question. The your records, the videos will show that. But before the end of the meeting, we were told that, in fact, there was no such meeting that took place. But while I mentioned that there might be some confidentiality that can be involving legislative executive privileges. Mm-mm. And the possibility of violating some data privacy act. Mm-mm. It was clearly announced then that there was no such Zoom component.
Mm-mm. Okay, and what about the 600,000 metric ton idea allegedly coming from the president?
That was an allegation. That was an allegation. That was an allegation coming from, I think, Mr. Serafica. But there was no proof. It was not substantiated by any documentary or other testimonial evidence. That was a claim. A bare allegation is a mere claim, not having any anchor or leg in fact nor in law.
Which leads some viewers to think that
you can claim anything. You can claim 800,000, 900,000, but it has to be supported by facts. It was not substantiated, mm-hmm. corroborated by any other statement. It was just him. So we gave the minority the ample time to support that, but no evidence came up. In fact, it was the minority who moved for the issuance of the subpoena to the executive secretary, which we granted. And they have all the time. They have all the time when the executive secretary was there to ask questions. Mm. To ask questions. So, I'm not against a minority report. It's part of the tradition, but again, the minority report is just a conglomeration of the views of the minority that would be part as an annex of the majority report.
Mm-mm. But to the thought that the hearing was prematurely terminated, what is your reaction to that?
No, it was the minority leader himself said that they have no more questions to ask.
And so therefore you moved to terminate.
This is the problem. The claims of premature termination, I don't think that would have a bearing, because in previous congresses, when you have long hearings, people would say it's been taking you so long, there is no end to this. But when you finish this, and as I promised, there is a roadmap, there's going to be an end to this, and in 48 hours, we're able to submit a report, of course people will question again, how come it's too fast? When you're too fast, people question. When you're too slow, people would also question.
Hear you.
But the fact of the matter is with that, we came up with the report.
Okay, we got you. Now, the series of actions of the Department of Agriculture under Secretary Sebastian, SRA Administrator, Serafica, board members Beltran and Valderrama had overwhelming badges of good faith. That's coming from the views of the two members of the minority. And yet in your report, we all know this by now, you recommended the filing of charges against these officials.
For the first time, I've been studying law for the last several decades. This is the first time I heard of that term, badges of good faith. We all hear when you go to law school, you hear badges of fraud. But badges, there's no such thing as badges of good faith. But I don't I don't quarrel with the report. So just read the 75-page report of the majority, compare it with the 17-page report of the minority. Mm-hmm.
Because that's the question right there. You have the majority report, the findings of the Blue Ribbon Committee. You have the views of...
The majority
of...
prevails.
Right.
In a democratic system, the majority prevails. We cannot, of course, we cannot satisfy the minority, but the records will show that they were given ample time to question, to participate. They were there. In fact, they were the ones who asked for, I mentioned this, for the presence of several witnesses.
Yes.
So we don't quarrel with that. Again, in a democratic system, the majority prevails.
Mm-hmm. But here's the situation that we have right now, Senator Tolentino. You have that report, you have the minority view. In the middle is the public. Because the reports are not exactly, I mean, it's magkasalungat po.
It will not match. It will not match.
Exactly.
It will never match.
Exactly. So my question here...
The prevailing report is the majority report. Mm-hmm. In any democratic system, the majority will prevail.
Yeah.
Even in elections.
So in the middle po kasi, yung publiko. So, you know,
how can you play... How can you claim that the public...
No, because there are, yung sinabi nyo na rin po, magkasalungat, hindi talaga magmamatch yan. So the question is, Senator Tolentino, what...
No, you cannot claim that the public is in between. You cannot claim. Perhaps there are some sectors that have neutral views or fence-sitters, but again, the majority prevails. And this is based on factual, this is legal and factual basis.
So ang sinasabi niyo po, the majority prevails and therefore the public should believe the report of the majority?
We're not saying that. Everything is based on law and evidence.
Mm.
Evidence. You cannot, inferences cannot be drawn from other inferences. Yun yung batas, yun yung legal system. So we have the rule of law to follow.
Mm-hmm.
It's not based on speculation. It should not be based on emotion, passion. It should be based on the spirit and the letter of the law.
Interesting that you mentioned the law and factual evidence. The minority report...
I'm a lawyer. I know my law.
Opo, ito po ang sinasabi ng views ng minorya. They're saying that the recommendation of the filing of charges against these individuals are lacking in factual and legal basis. How do you then defend?
They have to prove that. They should have asked questions. They should have supplied us with the evidence. Those are mere allegations. They participated in the hearings. Mm-hmm. They were there. They should have supplied us with the proof to enable us to reach that quantum of proof, that certainty that these persons are liable, this should be done. So they were allowed to submit they have the burden to supply us with the evidence required. Mm. But we waited. Wala naman.
All
so
right.
mere allegations cannot stand.
Mm.
Of course, we respect their views.
Mm. Senator Tolentino, we saw the beginning of the Blue Ribbon Committee hearing on the sugar importation fiasco and also saw it through the end. You were very, very deliberate in your actions as you headed the Blue Ribbon Committee hearing. Very, very deliberate also in the ways and on how you handled it. But what do you say to what Senators Pimentel and Ontiveros said, that during the hearing, these individuals were unfairly vilified in the proceedings, their careers tarnished because of how the hearing was conducted?
There is evidence of conspiracy, and I think you should read the report. I don't want to argue. Read the report.
Hmm.
They will have their day in court. They will have their lawyers. They will be given due process. Hmm. There's gonna be a due process. But I stand with the report signed by the majority, conspiracy established based on several jurisprudence. So ano pa ba yung kailangan? So this will go through a judicial process where they will have their day in court to dispute allegations of violations of Republic Act 3019 and other special laws.
And talking about due process now, let's go to the other investigation, this time on the laptops.
You should clarify that. You should clarify that. That this is not an inquisitorial proceeding. That what was done, this was done in aid of legislation.
Yeah.
The functions of the Blue Ribbon fully performed. So there's another step when you go to the judicial process.
Right. And that's very clear. In all of our coverages, that's what we always reiterate. Let's go to...
And it's very transparent, covered by live streaming, et cetera, et cetera.
So let's go to the other inquiry now. When you mentioned due process,
which is ongoing, and I think we should not preempt, prejudge, and we should not, again, as I mentioned in the previous interview, we should not jump to any conclusion yet because it is still evolving. If there is such a thing as sub judice in a court, I think. We should have a semblance of that.
But still, I have to ask you this. And we have been covering it as well.
Yes.
When you talk about due process, do you think that that was present in the actions of the Education Department? Even Senator Sherwin Gatchalian already said it was defective, the laptops.
If you're referring to the persons being investigated, I think the proper thing to do is to interview them. I will not be their lawyer. I am not lawyering for them. You should ask their positions or views whether the actions of the Blue Ribbon is in consonance with due process of law.
No, it's not about the Blue Ribbon Committee, but it was a due process, whether
so
or not it was followed. Yeah, not exactly your view, because I know what you're going to answer there, but what is clear to you in the past, in the recent hearings, what is clear to you now? Was due process followed in the way they perfected the contract and procured and delivered?
There's a big difference between due process of law and procedural requirements in administrative procurements concerning Republic Act 9184. Due process would probably be a generalized term that should not be used often because this involves the purchasing of a laptop. So probably that's a misquoted term for a layman. So I think I would hold my opinion pending the conclusion of this investigation.
Okay, let me just go back to Christopher Lloyd Lau. In the beginning, he was saying, remember this, Senator, that he wasn't there anymore when all of this happened?
Tie it up with the previous hearing during the sugar hearing, wherein during that previous hearing when we denied, the Blue Ribbon Committee denied his request that his whole departure order be lifted. So started with that.
Right. So do you now what can you tell the public about up to this point, up to yesterday's hearing?
We are still trying to piece the evidence. I know it's good to play Sherlock Holmes for every armchair general quasi lawyer, but we have to really connect the dots based on facts, evidence. There is such a thing as a quantum of proof required, and we're still tying this up all together. All the loose thing. I think this should not be treated just as a telenovela.
Seriously,
we are looking into this because you look at rights of people, you look at the amount involved, and you look at the consequences relative to the educational system. It was done during the previous DepEd administration. So the factum probandum should come out after the end of the hearings.
And we also should look at the hard work that the senators have put into precisely to help the teachers, to aid them in their teaching during the time of the pandemic, because that's the very that's at the very core of this issue. You worked hard so that they could procure the necessary equipment to aid their teaching.
And we're still exercising our oversight functions as we speak.
Mm-mm. All right. Now, how many more hearings before you wrap up the inquiry?
I don't know. I don't know, because what would happen, and you're familiar with this, is that when we're approaching the budget, hearings will be tied up with other hearings, as well as we're looking at the availability of even some of the members of the Blue Ribbon Committee, as well as the rooms available. So all of this will have to be taken into consideration. But I am pretty sure that I will end this. Just like as my previous promise that I will end that sugar fiasco hearing, there will be a definitive conclusion to this.
Mm-hmm. And as you move towards that, what are the important questions that still need to be answered before you wrap up this inquiry into the laptops procurement?
Like your news report, whether there was an accurate date of the notarization, when the MOA was signed, I would think that would be outcome determinative insofar as the hearing is concerned. Mm-hmm. So we're still trying to, again, piece all of this together, and you will have the report. And again, I'm sure there will be a minority report again to this. So you will have the report, and that's democracy.
Mm. All right. We're going to have to leave it at that. Blue Ribbon Committee Chair, Senator Francis Tolentino, there joining us this noon. Really appreciate it. Thanks again. All right. From there, we're going to take a quick break. Up ahead, hundreds of Filipino workers stranded on a remote American military base over a wage dispute. We'll give you details of that story and more when Dateline Philippines returns. Stay with us. And we're back. You're still watching Dateline Philippines here on ANC. An update on the weather now. Typhoon Nanmadol intensifies ahead of its entry into the Philippine area of responsibility. Let's get the latest now from ABS-CBN's resident meteorologist Ariel Rojas. Over to you.
Hi, good afternoon, Carmina. Tropical cyclone Nanmadol continues its rapid intensification ahead of its Philippine area of responsibility entry this afternoon. It was last spotted 1,465 kilometers east-northeast of extreme northern Luzon, with maximum sustained winds of 165 kilometers per hour and gusts up to 205 kilometers per hour. It is moving west-northwestward at a speed of 10 kilometers per hour. Once inside the PAR, it will be assigned the local name Josie. Its stay, though, will be quick as it will exit by nighttime. And Pag-asa says it will reach super typhoon category while heading towards Ryukyu Islands. It will then weaken to typhoon status before recurving towards Kyushu and Honshu in Japan. While it will not directly affect the country, it has been enhancing the southwest monsoon or Habagat since Wednesday. Today, monsoon rains will batter Bataan, Occidental Mindoro, Palawan, and Western Visayas. Cavite, Batangas, the rest of Mimaropa and Visayas, and even Zamboanga Peninsula and the Sulu Archipelago will also be raining today. Our kapamilya are cautioned and advised to prepare against flooding and landslides. This afternoon, Quezon and Bicol region will start experiencing rains as well, and thunderstorms will affect Central Luzon, Cordillera, and Cagayan Valley tonight. The Habagat will continue to dampen Metro Manila, Calabarzon, Bicol region, Mimaropa, and Western Visayas this weekend, and that will continue until next week. Afternoon and evening thunderstorms will also affect Northern and Central Luzon and the rest of Visayas this Saturday and Sunday. It's the latest on the weather. This is Ariel Rojas. Happy weekend and stay safe, kapamilya. Back to you, Carmina.
Thanks a lot, Ariel Rojas there. Back here in the newsroom, it's all systems go for the Maguindanao plebiscite this Saturday. The Commission on Elections says backup measures are in place to ensure a smooth conduct of the referendum. The poll body expects at least a 60% voter turnout.
All the plebiscite committee members had duly reported and had been trained. We also have contingency plebiscite committee members, and these are personnel of the Philippine National Police, which the COMELEC had also trained. All the security preparations had been laid down, and the AFP and the PNP, our security partners, are very optimistic that there will be no untoward incident, but in case there are, we are also prepared for that. We asked our security partners to ensure not just the polling places, but the residences of our people in Maguindanao so that they will be able to go out of their homes, vote.
Residents all over the province will cast their vote tomorrow, September 17, on whether they are in favor of splitting the region into two. The COMELEC is optimistic it can announce the results before Sunday. For an advocacy rights group, it's high time to split Maguindanao into two. Akwa Bakwit chairperson Samira Gutok says doing so would be beneficial for the province in terms of localization of services. If the split takes place, Gutok says there has to be enough congressional representation to ensure equal development.
A strong representation from Maguindanao, napakarami nila pong tribo na irerepresenta sa Kongreso, ay isang mekanismo, kaya nga po demokrasya tayo. And at the same time, bilang Muslim representatives of a very rejuvenated Bangsamoro, now we know the president is knowledgeable about martial law na na-damage yung aming homeland. 5% of Mindanao is Maguindanao. Can you imagine na napakalaking 20 so-called billion ang nagastos annually since 1970s for conflict? And 56 countries of the Islamic world are monitoring us in the peace process.
The Defense Department submits a more than 200 billion peso budget proposal to Congress for its modernization and pension programs next year. Lawmakers, meanwhile, asked the defense chief about the push to revive mandatory military training in schools. Let's hear more from Bianca Dava.
The Department of National Defense and Department of Education continue to conduct talks on a more comprehensive Reserve Officers Training Corps, or ROTC, program for senior high school students. The revival of the mandatory ROTC was among the issues tackled during deliberations on the DND's proposed 2023 budget at the House of Representatives on Thursday.
The DND, through the Armed Forces of the Philippines as the implementer, and of course with the help of other agencies like the Department of Education and other agencies, will ensure that safeguards and strict accountability measures will be in place to prevent, as I was mentioning earlier, the repeat of unfortunate circumstances that happened before, kung bakit na-abolish ang ROTC.
But the DND said the program will be different from its previous version. Several areas will be covered by the program, including illegal drug use prevention awareness, health and sanitation, road safety and discipline, and military history.
Hindi po ito yung typical na marcha-marcha po agad o masyao tinatawag nating military centric. Ang purpose po nitong pinresent namin na program of instruction para po sa 11 grade 12, 11 and 12 ay ito po is yung i-develop po natin yung citizenship ng tao at isa lang po doon yung disaster resilience.
Hindi ko maintindihan na bakit pati yun, health and fitness, no, through the ROTC program, and nandyan naman na yung ating mga PE teachers, yung ating mga health teachers para magturo niyan. So ano ba yung kakaiba, ano yung pwedeng maituro na hindi pwede ituro ng iba nating mga guro? Pagtuturo ng military history, actually pwede itong ma-integrate sa pagtuturo natin ng kasaysayan. For me, walang bagong ino-offer, no? Kaya tingin ko, iba yung tunay nating motibo dun sa panunumbalik ng mandatory ROTC.
Under the 2023 National Expenditure Program, the Defense Department will receive a budget of 310.87 billion pesos. 77% or 240.3 billion pesos will be the department's regular fund, which is 9% higher than the allocated budget for 2022, while the remaining 23% or 70.5 billion pesos will be allotted for the pension of retirees and veterans. Also under the DND's budget, 40 billion pesos will go to the AFP's revised modernization program.
The 40 billion is part of our multi-year contract allocation. We entered into contracts the previous years, and ito pong 40 billion ay part na ng babayaran natin dito sa mga multi-year contract allocations natin na ginawa noong mga nakaraang taon.
The AFP's modernization program aims to strengthen the military's capabilities in maritime security and counterterrorism, as well as in disaster response and humanitarian assistance. DND Officer in Charge Jose Faustino Jr. said the Philippines maintains its goal of developing a minimum credible defense posture despite an ongoing review of the AFP's modernization projects. At present, only 14% of the program's Horizon 2, which ends this year, has been completed.
I directed the Armed Forces of the Philippines to come up with a reprioritized Horizon 3 that will really address and at least achieve this minimum credible defense process. As I mentioned, detect, identify, intercept, and neutralize.
Bianca Dava, ABS-CBN News.
A former human rights commissioner alarmed over yet another proposed budget cut for the agency. Under the budget department's 2023 spending bill, the Commission on Human Rights would only get 878 million pesos for next year. That's 8% lower than the CHR's 900 million peso budget for this year, and way below the agency's proposed 1.6 billion peso spending plan. Former CHR Commissioner Gwen Pimentel Gana warns a budget cut would gravely affect services of the agency.
Ang epekto yung sa delivery of the services ng CHR. Kasi syempre, sabi ni ED Jackie, maapektuhan daw ang transportation. Eh, anong equivalent to? Syempre yung investigative arm namin. Even yung promotions, you know. So maraming mga services na maapektuhan. At napakalungkot isipin na bakit ba nila pinagdidiinan, nabawasan ang budget ng CHR. Eh, di ba nila nakikita na para sa proteksyon ng lahat. Mm-hmm. Kasi kahit sila, mambabatas, you know, covered sila.
Another former commissioner, meanwhile, says government should immediately appoint new CHR officials. The CHR was left without a chairperson and commissioner since May this year.
There's a global standard for national human rights institutions accreditation.
Mm-mm.
Ngayon, just to say na we're up for accreditation already in March 2023. Pagka natenga pa ang appointments, ay malaking dagok po yan sa komisyon. Kasi pag tiningnan mo, trabaho rin ang gobyerno natin to enable check and balance mechanisms in our country. Pag hindi yan ginawa, anong ibig sabihin yan about your governance, di ba?
Mm-hmm.
Na akala ko ba, bukas ka sa kritisismo, bukas ka na pakinggan ang mga hinaing ng tao.
Hundreds of Filipino workers stranded on the remote American military base on Diego Garcia for at least 3 years now. According to Philippine Migrant Workers Secretary Susan Ople, at least 800 Filipino employees of the U.S. Navy's defense contractor KBR have not left the island for 3 years over a dispute on their wages. The dispute began after the Philippine government called out the firm for paying below the minimum wage of $7 per hour. KBR employees are being paid only $5.25.
Natatakot sila pag nag-vacation sila ng Pilipinas, either hindi na sila makabalik dahil hindi papayagan ng POEA dito, or pakatanggalin sila sa trabaho. Kasi may threat yung KBR, yung Kellogg Brown and Root, na isang defense contractor ng U.S. Navy. Binabantaan yung ibang manggagawa natin doon na mag-resign na lang kayo kung magbabakasyon tayo. Ang balak namin, kakausapin namin uli yung KBR, and kung wala pang mangyari, susulat na yung Department of Migrant Workers sa Department of Labor ng U.S. government para mag-intervene na sila dito sa problema na ito. At susulat din kami sa U.S. Navy kung saan may kakontrata itong KBR.
Employees on Diego Garcia, which sits in the Indian Ocean, can only leave through quarterly chartered flights. Their employer suspended those flights earlier this year, citing COVID concerns. World News Now, Ukraine finds another mass grave of more than 440 bodies in the eastern, make that northeastern town of Izyum in the Kharkiv region. The town was recaptured from Russian forces some days ago after a sweeping counteroffensive by Kyiv. The regional police chief says some of those buried had been killed by Russian airstrikes. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky likens this discovery to what happened in Bucha, a town on the outskirts of the capital where mass graves were uncovered earlier this year. Zelensky says Russia is leaving behind death everywhere and must be held responsible. World leaders will travel to London this weekend to pay their last respects to Queen Elizabeth II. King Charles is set to host a reception for them at Buckingham Palace a day before the funeral. Among the high-profile guests who have confirmed their attendance are U.S. President Joe Biden and French President Emmanuel Macron. Meanwhile, Moscow has criticized the U.K.'s decision not to invite Russian President Vladimir Putin to the Queen's funeral. Russia's foreign ministry says the British attempt to use the national tragedy for geopolitical purposes is blasphemous towards the Queen's memory. Britain has sent out invitations to heads of state of nearly every country in the world, except for Russia, Belarus, Syria, Venezuela, Afghanistan, and Myanmar. The threat of a global recession is growing. That's according to the latest World Bank study as major central banks hike rates to fight stubborn inflation. The World Bank says the global economy is in the middle of one of the most internationally synchronous episodes of monetary and fiscal policy tightening of the past five decades. It notes, while such policy actions are necessary to contain inflation, their compounding effects may have larger impacts than intended, both in tightening financial conditions and steepening the growth slowdown by next year. World Bank President David Malpass now urges policymakers to shift their focus from reducing consumption to boosting production to avoid lasting consequences of policy tightening. Inflation worldwide has been rising due to supply constraints, which were exacerbated by the Russian invasion of Ukraine and COVID lockdowns in China. In sports, another tennis great bids goodbye to the sports. Roger Federer has announced he will be retiring after next week's Laver Cup. In his message to fans, the Swiss maestro admitted his knee problems have forced him to end his career. The 41-year-old winner of 20 Grand Slam titles has been out of action since a quarterfinal loss at Wimbledon in 2021, after which he underwent his third knee surgery in 18 months.
As many of you know, the past 3 years have presented me with challenges in the form of injuries and surgeries. I've worked hard to return to full competitive form, but I also know my body's capacities and limits, and its message to me lately has been clear. I am 41 years old. I've played more than 1,500 matches over 24 years. Tennis has treated me more generously than I ever would have dreamt, and now I must recognize when it is time to end my competitive career. The Laver Cup next week in London will be my final ATP event.
Rafael Nadal, arguably Federer's greatest on-court rival, says their shared years together was an honor and a privilege. He says Federer's retirement marks a sad day for himself and for sports around the world. Federer's retirement comes just weeks after fellow tennis legend Serena Williams also played her final professional match. And before we go, a jersey worn by basketball legend Michael Jordan fetched a record $10.1 million. It beat a record set in May for the most expensive sports memorabilia ever sold, which had been Diego Maradona's Hand of God jersey. The red Chicago Bulls uniform was iconic as it was worn by his Airness during Game 1 of the 1998 NBA Finals, which marked Jordan's last championship. For more on this story, head on over to news.abs-cbn.com. And that'll do it for today. Thanks for keeping us company the whole week this week. I'm Carmina Constantino. If you want to revisit today's episode, you can play back this newscast on ANC's YouTube channel and on ANC 24/7 on Facebook. Keep safe, keep it here on ANC.